right, welcome to the first episode of The Wine Show. We've been talking about for a long time, wine and soul, with the two sommeliers that I've had on the podcast here, and they're now on the network to talk about wine. Like, this is going to be awesome with two black sommeliers. Let's get into it. Cornelius Anthony Jr., my brother, how you been?
I'm blessed, man. I'm blessed. Glad to be here. Glad to see me finally able to put this together. Man, you've been talking about this for, man, a couple years now. So I'm glad to finally see it coming to fruition.
Yeah. Wanda Cole Nicholson, how are you doing? And thank you for doing this. This is going to be awesome.
I'm doing fantastic. Also, like Cornelius, blessed and highly favored. Looking forward to the holidays. We survived another year in this pandemic, and we've got a lot to be thankful for. So glad to be here. Glad to be here in good company with other St. Louis folk who are also excited about wine.
So yeah, let's go ahead, Cornelius.
I said we always got to keep this thing moving.
Yeah. Always.
Always.
Can't forget where you're from.
Never.
All right, let's jump into let's start with you, Wanda. Tell a little bit people that may not have or know about where you are, your little bit about your history, how you got into wine, and your experience in wine.
Sure. So I was born and raised here. I went to Parkway North from Creve Coeur, and I moved to Chicago back in 2002 and started waiting tables and working in hospitality, and started working at some higher end restaurants that had a sommelier. And just got really, really interested in wine. I've always been really interested in like science, geography, geology, you know, like the arts, things of that nature. And I found something where like all that, you know, came together and made this great, you know, world celebrated beverage. So, you know, like one thing led to another and opportunities kept presenting themselves. And I got the opportunity to take some sommelier exams and passed quite a few of those, worked on some restaurant floors. And then I came back to St. Louis about last year, and I have my own consulting company called VinBev. And I also work at Grapevine Wines in Kirkwood.
I got to come by there.
Yeah. Cornelius, the pride, I'll call him the pride in the hood, sommelier, the pride of the north side, St. Louis.
as
we found out from the new map, the Bronx.
Yes, the Bronx. From the Bronx.
Saw that.
St. Louis, Bronx. St. Louis, Bronx. St. Louis, Bronx. As some of my friends like to call me down here from St. Louis, the Dub representative. The North City Dub representative. Yeah, that's me. Born and raised in St. Louis. Like I said, North City pride. Went to Hazelwood East, go Spartans. Very proud of them. Love to see what they're doing now. But I actually got into wine on accident. You know, it wasn't something I was really looking out for. And it just kind of just fell in my lap. And I've been riding the wave ever since. I've done everything from retail, distribution, managed wine bars. Now I'm actually a sommelier at a high end, if not the top Mexican restaurant in Houston, but one of the top three for sure in the city of Houston. So I'm very, very blessed and thankful. This journey has really changed my life.
Okay, I'm going to interject something because Cornelius is being a little, he's being a little modest. Cornelius actually was just recently awarded the highest honor in Champagne.
Yes.
He's now a Champagne. What is, my apologies. Tell me the name of the honor.
I am the first African-American Master of Champagne in the city of Houston. And that's, I'm a very, you know me, I'm humble. I don't brag or boast. I just try and let the work speak.
That's why I'm doing it for you.
But thank you.
I'm doing it for you. You deserve the recognition because that's the heck of an accolade. He's the Champagne dude.
But last year, Black Wine Professionals came up with a scholarship in partnership with Laurent Perrier, and it gave out five, and I was a part of the original five. And it was a year-long process, you know, doing study groups with Laurent Perrier, some of their workers here in the United States, and was able to pass the test in September of this year with highest honors. And again, you know, I'm the first in Houston, and I'm really, really love and enjoying. I've enjoyed the ride, but I'm loving it even more because it's opened up a lot of doors and opportunities for me here, but also nationally. So happy about that.
Cheers to being the firsts.
Yeah, it's all about congrats. Congrats.
Black history. We make black history every day.
So what, what's yes. the so what's the four, like it was four of the people, were those four of the people in Houston or were they across the country?
Across the country.
Okay.
I have one classmate, Marissa, she's in Atlanta. I have another classmate, she was in Baltimore. I have one who's in Puerto Rico, and I have one who's in Chicago. My boy Vernon, Vernon Jackson's in Chicago. So yes. Two of us have taken it and two of us have passed it. So.
Dope, man. That's dope. Yes. All right. Let's jump into some things. Like what is it about black? It seemed like there's a rejuvenation, particularly black women with wine. What is it about this kind of explosion of people in black wine, black people in wine? And Wanda, you've been in the game for a while. So what have your experience seeing the transition or change or like how it's kind of moved a different route? And has it changed that much?
It's definitely changed a lot. When I first got into the wine business in Chicago, there were literally like about like five or six of us who are African-American going to these tastings and such. And I will say like in a city like Chicago, like people didn't really look at you like as if like, who is this? You know what I mean? Like it was, I feel like it was a little bit more of like an acceptance thing. But just over the years, and I really credit the rise of social media, because before it was like a culture that was kind of like, you know, like private, kind of like a members only, you know, like good old boys type of club. And people pretty much kept to themselves. But with the rise of social media and everybody being interconnected, people had much more access to education and to opportunities and just access to wine, period, you know, like I did not, like I would not have known what the Loire Valley was. Loire Valley is the region of the wine that I'm drinking. I wouldn't have known what it was had I not worked in a restaurant. Now you can just do a Google search and somebody can type in, oh, Loire Valley, that sounds cool. And not only pull up the region, but know everything about the geography of the region, find some common producers, wine styles and everything else. So like I've definitely seen a shift in terms of like access and accessibility and just overall knowledge and interest.
I mean, to piggyback on what she was saying, I know just for myself personally, from social media aspect, it's like before, maybe like, say like, you would say probably like maybe 10 years ago, you would just know these producers. You would just know them by name. Mm-hmm. You may not ever get to go to DRC. Most people will never get a chance to actually do. Even people in the industry never get the chance to go to DRC.
That's a region of Burgundy in France. Make some of the most expensive wine.
Most expensive wines in the world come from that area. It's listen, I've had it.
What does DRC stand for? What does DRC stand for?
Domaine Romani Conti. And I actually had a shot of it. And that little shot.
That sounds like when people get a shot of Louis VIII. Like, oh man, I got to say Louis VIII shot.
Listen, when you, it's some good vintages of DRC is costing you a good high five figures.
Yeah, sometimes four or five figures. Yep.
Four or five figures.
For a bottle?
Yeah.
For a bottle. Easy. Good vintage? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
They don't make that much. So one of the reasons that it is so expensive is they don't make a lot. Like I think it's maybe like a few thousand cases for the entire world. It's either a few hundred or a few thousand cases for the entire world. So that's one of the reasons why it is so like, you know, highly sought after. And then it comes from like, it's a monopole. So what that means is like that one particular area is dedicated solely to making that wine. So it's right. Just not enough to go around, you know, supply and demand. The less your supply, it seems like the higher your demand and the more you get to charge for it. I mean, I've had some too, like, and it was, it like, I didn't buy the bottle. It was one of my generous regulars. He's actually a hedge fund manager from St. Louis who shared a little bit with me, but it's definitely legit.
It's very legit.
So when someone comes in with asking for that bottle, that hedge fund person came in, Wanda, was it like, you know, like were you at the strip club where Dollar Bill hits the thing and then like is all the bells and whistles go off? That man, is somebody buying it? Somebody buying it? Go get it. Go get it. Pretty, somebody bring out the
pretty much.
I don't know if they're like an alarm.
Oh yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, and then not all like not all places even get it. Like, you know, it's highly, highly allocated. So, you know, the place where I worked, we got like a few bottles a year and that was like considered good. You know, there are some restaurants who don't get any. So,
Basically these places are getting them on consignment, I'm assuming. Nobody's like straight paying for it.
Some people actually put it on their list and never really have it. It's just to have it, just to say it's on there. But nobody like literally they'll put a price point that they know that the average person is not going to pay for. And then when somebody asks me, be like, man, we sold out of it. But they've never really had it. It's kind of like Van Winkle. You know what I'm saying? Like when Pappy comes out, it's gone quick. Anybody in the distributor that has it, people line up to get that a year in advance. It only comes out, I think, around like November. Comes out once a year. They release it once a year. And when they release it, it's gone. It's already taken care of. And nobody's going to be sitting on it, holding on it. The restaurants, private collectors, they already have it lined up. And that's how DRC is. When DRC comes out, when they release it, it's already allocated. It's already like it's a rarity. And if you're trying to get it, you have to know. It's like trying to even go to see their venue. You can go past it, but actually having to actually sit down and going into the cellar, that's not gonna happen at all.
Wow.
Very, very rare.
Yeah, all right. So what is your experience with being black person as a sommelier in the wine industry?
I have to say kind of the same as Wanda said. I mean, I haven't really face the, you know, people looking at me strange. I think that now, especially in the Houston wine scene, I don't know any females, any African-American females are like that. As far as like, it's the sommelier, like restaurant side. I mean, we do have, shout out to Miss Iris Allen. I consider like the godmother of African-American wine in Houston. She's probably like the only one. And then like my mentor, Julia, she lived here, but she doesn't live here anymore. She lives in DC. But active people in the industry, it's only brothers. And, you know, it's slowly changing. I just think that since there's not really a straightforward path to get into this industry, it's really hard for us. Like, you can't just go sign up for something. Okay, if you do A, B, and C, you're gonna be able to get to the rest. Like, you really kind of have to maneuver and figure this journey out, because it's really not a straight path to any way in this industry. Everybody's journey is different. Everybody.
I agree.
All right, let's talk about, you all were breaking down to me this concept of some saving the wine. I don't even know what it. I just put the little cork thing at the top, and I think it's all good. The little diamond thing, you know, we got. I just put that in there, and I think I'm good to go. Until I taste it again, like a day later, and I'm like, this is nasty. What is it, the apparatus, the technology you all were talking about? And I'm gonna write it down too, that you all were just trying to, you're showing me before we started.
So I was showing you the Coravin. The Coravin is a wine preservation system. And what that basically does is it ejects just a little bit of wine out of the bottle, and then it uses argon gas, and argon gas kind of like helps to preserve it and keep the, you know, and keep too much air from coming into the bottle. Now, because it's not like foolproof, and because it is still a little small little hole from the needle, you are still going to get a little bit of air, but not as much. And by you not having that much air in your wine, you're preserving it for a little bit longer.
Cornelius, you were talking about a little bit too, though, because you use it as well. Does everybody use it? I mean, is that like a...
I couldn't use that device for sparkling. They actually just released a style of Coravin for sparkling, where basically instead of using your traditional, you know, champagne stopper, as they call them, you would use that device. What that device does is it takes all the air out, and then you're able to basically press a button and it pours the champagne for you. And then again, it sucks the air out again, and then you're supposed to keep it. But again, even with opening it, it's really only gonna make the champagne last maybe, I would say realistically, 3 to 4 extra days. It's not gonna save the wine for years or something like that. If it's something you're trying to age, I wouldn't mess with Corbin, period, because it's oxidation is still going to get in once you punch a hole in it.
Yep. So if I get that $100,000 bottle of wine, I can't save that forever and be like, hey, you know.
Well, I mean, you can't really. That's the thing about wine that people I don't think understand is that wine is actually a living organism. It's alive. And wine actually does die. The older that white wine gets, it gets darker. The older that red wine gets, it gets lighter. But when a wine is dead, they both turn a brick color. Like it's like a straight up dirty brick color. And wine, like us as humans, it ages over time. And you have to treat it as such. That's why temperature control is really important. How you store your wines is really important. How you, you know, handle them is really important, because all those things can help change how the wine can actually turn out. Each wine has a peak point. You know, for some champagnes, it may be 3 years or 7 years or 10 years. And then once it gets to peak point, the taste value goes down. Certain notes you may get in its youthful days, you may not get 10 years later because it's matured. Same thing with any red or white wine. It's all the same thing.
Okay. So what should people be knowing that's going on in wine right now? Just that, like, hey, this is what's kind of moving the industry. What's kind of the new thing or the hip thing as well, Wanda?
We coming.
Perfect. We're coming, and we're not going anywhere.
We're not going anywhere.
Oh, and in addition to that, we're bringing our friends and our homies with us.
I can't wait to that. So we have the Crip Walking Championship at the wine.
It's kind of like house party, man. You know, when the brother comes to the door, we here. You know, we here, man.
Not full force.
Yeah, full force. Yeah, we here. You know, no hoods at the party. No hoods at the party. You know, but no, honestly, man, we coming.
I agree. We are diversifying the wine industry, like, by leaps and bounds in every single aspect. Gone are the days of the good old boys club.
Absolutely.
Sommeliers look like me, look like Cornelius, from all ages. You know, some of our brown sisters and brothers, some of our, you know, Asian, Native American, LGBTQ, like, it used to be a good old boys club, and now we're I don't want to say infiltrating, because that's not so much of a positive word, but we're coming. We're not coming, we're here.
Yeah, we are
finally getting our just due. I think that we see the play, we see what's going on, and it took, I hate to say, the social injustice that was going on in this country to really open up the conversation of lack of diversity in wine. So I think that's actually, and I always tell people this here in Houston, that George Floyd, I know this is a very sensitive topic for a lot of people, but George Floyd's situation, I think, was actually the changing point in wine, because it opened up that conversation. Why is there a lack of diversity? Why are these things going on? And people, we've talked about it amongst each other privately, but to be publicly out there, when Tahiri did her article, I think it was in Wine Spectator, about her experience taking the SOM exam, the term master, how that was, and Miss Julia did a very lengthy, strong-willed speech about lack of diversity, and it opened up the ears and minds of a lot of people who can make a difference in all these different platforms. And it's opened up a lot of doors. I've seen more African Americans on the top 40 under 40 the last 2 years than I have
ever
in the seven years I've been in wine. And that's not saying that these people they've all deserved it, but they've been doing it. But there's so many people who are still doing it, who have paved the way, that we have to give recognition to. I always like to use Thomas Price. A lot of people don't know Thomas Price was the first Black master sommelier in this country.
Was it Carlton?
He was first, and Carlton was 2 years later.
Okay.
Carlton was 2 years later, but it kind of happened like back to back. But a lot of people don't even know who he is. A lot of people are just now, Carlton is more on the scene than Thomas is. But you know, it's a lot of things about us, and you know, with anything with us, it's like golf. Once you put us in there, man, we usually take it over. And I think there's a little hesitation about that, but we here now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew Thomas Price for a couple of years. Like he's multiracial. So is Carlton. So I did not know that they were until like someone told me. Now, when I saw Thomas in person, I kind of thought, I'm like, I have a little black in you or something, but you know,
like he's passing, but he make, is he passing or is he not?
That's what you're thinking.
I mean,
he's like Colin Powell. He's actually kind of look like
no, because you can look at Colin Powell and tell, like.
I'm looking at a picture of him right now. I can see exactly what you're saying.
Louisiana, he would pass.
Okay, maybe in Louisiana. Maybe in Louisiana. Okay, I got it.
Louisiana, he would pass. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal brother. Very, very knowledgeable. And I just, like I said, so many people who have paved this way that haven't gotten opportunities that we're getting today. Maybe a lot of reasons, maybe because the platforms weren't available, but they definitely deserve their flowers. Same way I feel about Branson B and Champagne Hip Hop. You know, he's actually one person as well, but you know, it's up to us to continue the journey and take this to the next level, because it's there, because this door and window of them, I'm not gonna say feeling sorry for us, but allowing us to get these positions and be in this place is not going to last forever. This wave is going to die down.
And it's up to us to continue providing, you know, access and continuing to open doors and putting people on if we're going to continue the trend per se.
Well, I will say this, Dale, before you continue on. So what's your thought on this natural wine wave? Are you an orange wine person?
You want me to be nice or you want me to be honest?
I'm not, look,
I don't know if y'all being nice or honest, so go ahead.
So let me define what Cornelius is talking about. So natural wine is like wine made with like as little intervention as possible. Like they're using wild yeasts and they're not using a lot of the things that kind of like preserve the wine and keep it like clean and sound, they're not using. So you're kind of just like letting Mother Nature do its thing. And I've had some natural wines, like I'm gonna be honest with you, there are some that I've had that are good, that are, you know, approachable. But for my particular taste and my particular palate, like I prefer something that tastes a little bit more clean and refined, even if it's not quote unquote natural. So to answer your question, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's too gritty for me. And it's every, how can I put it? Every produce, it's an experiment. I mean, when you try wine in general, it's an experiment. But when it comes to natural wine, like, you really have to be like a fan of it, because you're knowing you're going to get something different. It's going to be, there's no definition of notes or the palate on the nose. Most of the time, I will say they're funky, super funky, like gym sock, barnyard.
Oh, so funk. It doesn't smell good either?
No, it's like barnyard, like literally most of the.
Some of them smell kind of sour, and that's because they're using, whenever you use like, so a lot of wines use like manufactured yeasts or, you know,
cultured yeasts
or, you know, yeast that they have basically like tested and proved that these particular yeasts give off these flavors or these aromas. Like these yeasts are tried and true. The natural winemakers are using whatever yeast is in the air. Whatever yeast is hanging around, like it's hanging on your apple skin, hanging around your grapes, hanging around your bananas, you know, like wherever, because yeast is, you know, they're microorganisms in the air. Whatever's in the air is getting in your wine, and you don't know what kind of effects those particular yeasts are going to have. So you get like this real wild, like have you ever had lambic beer?
No,
I have.
So lambic beer is like purposefully made in like a sour way. It like a lot of natural wines that I've had taste kind of like lambics. And I always say, like, if I want a lambic, I'll drink a lambic. I don't really want my wine to taste like lambic. I want my wine to taste like wine.
Exactly.
So is that the equivalent of the natural vodkas, like your what is the, I can't remember the name of it now. What's the one that blew up that was basically a natural vodka that everybody drinks? I can't remember it now.
You're talking about like Tito's or
Tito's, right? Is that the equivalent of Tito's for vodkas?
No, because vodka is still distilled.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. You distill something, you get rid of all of those impurities. You're getting rid of the funk. Right. You know,
that's the wine gonna have that funk. George Clinton funk.
Okay.
Not to get funked up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If I was to bring you, when I come back in town, we're gonna have to take you, let you just
no, I'm good. Y'all already gave me enough.
Let me tell you. That's the only way you'll get to learn and understand your palate. You're not gonna like everything.
Okay.
But at least you'll be able to see.
You know, you'll have like a reference point.
Right. Every time you try a glass of wine or a bottle, it's kind of like you're putting it in a Rolodex. You're picking up notes, you're picking up flavors, you're picking up styles. That way, when you try something else that's similar to it, you're like, okay, I can go back to what I had before. Okay, it doesn't have the, you know, the it's not as zesty or as crisp and clean as the last one I had. Why is that? And then you go into, okay, where is it located? You know, how's the soil? Like, you know, how the venue's planted? You know, are they doing organic or sustainable type of things? All those things pay into play, but you have to create a Rolodex. You can't just be like, hey man, I'm just gonna drink Stella Rosa every day and all day, and that all wine is based upon Stella Rosa. Stella Rosa saying, if it ain't Stella Rosa, I don't like it. Then you're not gonna really build your palate. You have to try different things.
And you can always come back to whatever it is that you like, but at least, you know, expose yourself, because there's a huge, vast world of wine. Like, they make wine on pretty much every continent except like Antarctica. But, you know, they make wine everywhere else. So there's a whole lot out there to be experienced. And there's a lot of resources to teach you about what you might like and what, you know, what you should drink with what and when.
Exactly.
So y'all saying I should, you guys saying I should try prison wine then, and then get my palate right from the bottom and then move it on up. I'm just saying. I mean,
prison wine.
Yeah, prison moonshine, a prison wine, or whatever they make.
You know what? That'll give you a basic fundamental understanding.
You started literally from the bottom.
Yes, literally started from the bottom. Like, literally. Like, if you want to understand how, like, fermentation can work and how you can really make that happen at your house, then by all means, use prison wine. But you don't have to start there.
Yeah, I don't want to come out one eye. Like, well, you know what? You drink something like moonshine, and you only got one eye. And your eye can't open. I've seen it happen to people where they ain't been the same.
I mean, there's some good wines at every level. Like, there's some good box wines. There's some good big bottle. Yeah, you know, screw tie. That's another.
What's considered a big bottle? What's a big bottle?
Like Gallo.
Oh, okay.
Ones you see like Carlos Rossi, things like that.
Now you're getting in my lane. You with the Carlos Rossi. Okay, I'm with you.
You know, it's some good in each level. But again, in order to try it, in order to know about it, you have to try it.
You know where your level is.
Exactly. I mean, like for champagne, for example, trying a Magnum of champagne, it can be the same bottle. Trying a 750, which is the standard bottle size, and then trying that same bottle that's a Magnum, the notes are going to be completely different, but only a little bit different because of the bottle size. There's a lot of things that go into that. But, you know, it's some good in all aspects of wine. But you won't know unless you try.
Right.
I just say don't drink Riuniti Lambrusco.
We're coming up on Thanksgiving. Wine at Thanksgiving. You know, I'm showing up at the in-laws' crib. You know, I'm trying to bring Carlos Rossi potentially. I know that's the wrong thing to do. You know, let's talk about the wine within the holidays, especially Black folks, soul food, all those different aspects of the holidays.
Well, the thing with wine and Thanksgiving, like, wine can serve a couple of different purposes. You know, like, number one, like, wine is really, really good for, like, social, you know, socially, helps to, you know, break the ice, you know, maybe see some of those relatives that you haven't seen in a while, maybe answer like some of those awkward questions, like why aren't you married yet when you're gonna have that baby? Right.
Loosen you up. Know, loosen
what's
you up.
What's up with you and such and such? You know, it kind of like loosens you up and, you know, kind of like gets, you know, kind of like gets the mood right. And then it kind of can act as like, you know, like a kind of like an aperitif and, you know, do like a palate cleanser. And, you know, and that's getting your mouth ready for all the richness that you are going, that you're going to experience. And then you can actually like drink the wine with the food. And what the wine is going to do is it's going to complement the food. And how it complements the food depends on like, you know, what type of wine you're getting, what type of food you're getting, and what you ultimately want the food to do for the wine. You know, or what you want the wine to do for the food. Do you want it to complement the food? Do you want it to contrast? Or are you just drinking to be drinking, which is perfectly fine too. So the first step is defining what you want your wine to do with Thanksgiving. That's the first step. And the second step is kind of like assessing, you know, like what type of wine you want to bring, what type of like wine I like to call a crowd pleaser, something that, you know, like everybody is going to enjoy. You might have like, you know, with a lot of African-American families, like you might have some relatives who only drink sweet, you may have some who only drink dry, and some who are a little bit more versatile. So, you know, like if you are in charge of bringing the wine, like your job is to make sure that you're going to bring something that everybody is going to enjoy. That's the first rule.
I would say that's probably the toughest job. Listen, I had a lot of jobs in wine. But when my aunts or family members called me and say, you are on wine duty, I'm like, man, it's hard, man. It's not an easy job. People think it's easy, but it's not. Because you're trying to appease so many different palates. That's why I bring champagne. Because it's simple. It's the ultimate palate cleanser, and it goes with everything.
Everything. You can drink champagne through your whole Thanksgiving.
Whole meal.
You're
fine.
Yep.
You ever seen that gum commercial where they eat the piece of gum, and then it goes to all these wild crazy stuff. They'd be like,
yeah.
That's exactly how.
So you suggest that people bring champagne instead of wine, potentially, if they don't know what they're doing.
only people I know that really have
a problem. It's the cheat codes. You give us the cheat code. Yeah. That's the cheat code.
Only people I know that really have a problem with champagne, like, is really people who suffer, like, acid reflux, because it's a lot of carbonation.
And a lot of acidity. Very, very high acid.
And if you have
good with food though.
Right. If you have like high acid reflux, or you have like, you know, stomach issues, it may not be the wine for you for that reason. But like Sis said, you know, is that it is because of its high acidity, that's why it pairs well with so many food, especially with Thanksgiving food. You know, we like fried turkey. One of the best pairings of champagne is fried chicken. Fry anything in champagne because the greasiness, it soaks it up. It soaks it up and it gives it up. You get a lot more flavor from it.
We're getting real stereotypical here, Cornelius. We're going down the road of stereotypical.
I'm just saying, we like fried turkey.
Turkey. I've done events like at predominantly like white establishments where we did fried chicken and champagne.
Wow. Okay. So that's just
It's across the board. I actually had a friend who got offended because she saw an article about that, like a white person had wrote about fried chicken and champagne. And she thought that they were kind of trying to make a mockery. And I was like, no, they've been doing this for years.
We have like, a bar.
They were the ones that came up with Popeyes and Blanc de Blanc. They were drinking Blanc de Blanc before we were. So, you know, like they had that access, like they knew that what it was going to pair with. We're a little late to the game.
We're the new kids on the block.
Exactly.
Like, so y'all saying Popeye actually has sell champagne on the side.
That would require getting a whole lot of laws and liquor license.
I got a business model now for them. I'm going to have to take that offline. Only in select cities where they have a sit-down Popeye sit-down establishment.
And serve champagne.
I would tell you, honestly, the first time I ever heard of that pairing, if you have a bar here in Houston, I think it's a Texas chain. It's called Max Wine Guys. And their claim to fame, they stand on this fried chicken and champagne. They sell food, but they like, listen, fried chicken and champagne is our thing. It's a Caucasian owned spot, but they stand on that. You go to their website, fried chicken and champagne. Every Thursday night, it's like half price off, half off a bottle, half off the chicken. And that's the first time I ever heard of that print. I thought the same thing Sis said her friends, like, man, y'all trying to make a mockery of us, but that's, you gotta understand. They've been doing this way longer, had more access than we have. I mean, think about it. At your Thanksgiving table, before we actually got to the industry, how many bottles of wine were actually on the Thanksgiving table?
Probably none.
None. You know, a lot of these cultures, man, have been doing this. This is embedded in their culture. They've been doing this since forever. You know, it's they feel weird if it's not a white bottle, a white wine or a red wine on the table, or you're not coming into the house and having an aperitif, or, you know, they have aperitifs, they drink during the meal, then they have a digestif afterwards. You know,
it's part of their gastronomy and their culture. Like, it's just right. Embedded into it. That's exactly what they do.
And we're not, this is something that's new for us, you know, for various reasons, but, I always say, man, champagne today, champagne yesterday, and champagne tomorrow. So
here's the catch within champagne, and I'm only going to scratch the surface because Cornelius is that champagne dude, and he could probably, I know he could school me about, you know, a producer or two. But within champagne, you have different styles. You have brut, mm-hmm. which is going to be dry, and then you have like second demi, second doux, which are going to be sweet. Mm-hmm. So like, if you want to bring champagne, because champagne is, you know, not only good with food, it's also celebratory. You can bring a brut for those who like the dry, and then you can bring a demi-sec for those who like the sweet. Laurent Perrier makes a really good demi-sec that I turn a lot of people on to who, you know, prefer sweeter wines. And demi-sec basically translates to half dry, but it really is a champagne that has a little bit of sweetness to it. And that acidity is really, really going to cut through the fat. And the acidity gives the wine like so much character and so much weight that it's going to stand up, particularly to like soul food, which has a lot of salt, a lot of sugar, a lot of richness, and a lot of texture. So like you can do champagne with turkey. You can do like a champagne that's seen some oak treatment with like a smoked turkey. You can do like a rosé champagne if you want to do something to, you know, like showcase some of like the condiments and, you know, some of the other like, some like the other like sauces and such. Like the world essentially is your oyster when it comes to like not just champagne but like other wines also that have like high acidity, you know, like some with like bigger tannin, some with like more richness and character to complement like the richness and the character of soul food.
I mean, the thing like also Laurent Perrier, Vieux Clicquot as well, they make a distinctive demi-sec. They also have one has one called Rich that's phenomenal, and you can find all these at Total Wine.
I never had Rich.
Rich is amazing. Okay. It's a little bit, I think Rich is a little bit more on the dope side. Is the sugar level is high, high, super high. But it's really, really good, especially if you like you know, if you come from a family that really likes spicy, it's like spicy food. Yeah, get that all day. I would definitely go for that. But, you know, realistically, I mean, a lot of people are going to want something that's more on the still wine side. So I would say my personal favorite wines outside of champagne for Thanksgiving and holidays, Pinot Noir, Grenache, Gamay. Those are probably my three favorite. Because I'm a huge dressing and cranberry sauce. And you get you a good Burgundy, especially Beaujolais, them cranberry notes are gonna just ooze out, man.
So let me ask you this. Do you like the traditional like ocean spray, like jelly in a can? Or do you like some of like the esoteric cranberry chutney and relishes with all these different elements?
I ocean air, man. Just give me the can. I've never liked cranberry sauce when you got the actual berry in it. I just want the slices.
Trader Joe's makes one that is delicious.
Really?
Cranberry orange relish. Delicious. I was the ocean spray person myself until I had actually my sister-in-law made a fire cranberry sauce. And then because like she, it was kind of similar to that. I went to Trader Joe's and had it. And every year that's what I have with my turkey. It's a must.
Okay. Okay. Can I ask a question real quick? Daryl and Wanda, do you prefer fried or roasted turkey?
Fried turkey. I hate roasted turkey.
I love roasted turkey and I like smoked turkey. So if I like smoked
turkey. I like smoked turkey too.
My first preference is smoked turkey, dark meat. But it depends on who's making the turkey. Like my dad makes like the best turkey I've ever had. And I'm pretty close, but I still haven't made it like his. He brines it for 24 hours and just like some sea salt, like literally like he puts the turkey in one of those big old green pots that your grandma and them used to make greens in for like the whole family or for the church. And he lets it sit overnight. And then I do the same thing. I brine my turkey and then I also like rub it with like a, I do like a garlic butter and like some Italian herb. I rub the whole surface with it under the white portion, like the where the breast is, where I know it's not gonna be juicy enough. Throw some pads of butter under that joint. Let it melt while it's cooking. I learned that working in restaurants. How to keep your white meat juicy. Throw some butter under the skin.
Yep, absolutely. That is the key.
Y'all also giving us the cooking tips. I dig it.
I will admit to work at a restaurant. If you work at a restaurant and your cooking skills don't go up, I don't know what you there for.
Yeah, I've only worked at McDonald's. That's the only one I was like 15. And I got fired.
So no. Job I've been fired.
Yeah, I got fired for running a side business through the drive-thru.
Why does that not surprise me? You were hustling.
But it wasn't illegal, but it was illegal.
It was unethical.
It was unethical. There you go.
There you go.
Unethical. I mean, everybody, shout out to all my Southside suburb Chicago people. They remember the Players Meal. I had a side meal that was the Arts Deluxe. Remember the Arts Deluxe? It was the Arts Deluxe and fries and a Coke for $5. Now, that $5 wasn't going in their cash register. It was going on in my side left pocket.
Well, there you go.
but I was a smart kid. They was like, yeah, we go. I went from, you know, fries to the drive-thru in like 3 days. They put me straight to the front. So this is what happens.
Man, you saw like my man said it coming to America. Hey, man. I'm gonna be flipping burgers and
it was the summer.
Next week I'll be on fries.
So you know, and I got dimed out the week before I was going back home to St. Louis. A week before. Wow. Somebody came and ordered the players meal and I wasn't working. That's how old I am with the players meal. Like with
an
I can't play with you.
Oh,
I can't
man.
Play with you.
And okay, then it's like, what's this meal? Like people are like, oh man, yeah, it's one Arch Deluxe, fries, and a Coke for $5.
So Cornelius, I'm gonna shoot you a dish and you tell me what you would pair with it.
Absolutely.
And then you give me one too.
All right.
Candied yams.
Oh man, candied yams. I'll probably do a nice, I'm always gonna keep it bubbles. I would do Jay Sparkling or Schaumburg.
Jay Schaumburg Sparkling?
Yeah, I would do Jay or Schaumburg Sparkling. Nice brew style. It's gonna be, it's not gonna kill the richness and the sweetness of the yams. I think it actually will kind of actually make the flavor, make it more flavorful. Actually, because it's going to, you know, with the marshmallows and the sweetness sometimes can be a little overpowering and kind of balance it out. So you get a little bit more texture of the food. So I would go California style sparkling with that.
Heard. Okay. You give me
one. Greens.
Ooh, that's a good one. I hadn't really thought about greens. That's a really good one. Which kind of greens? We talking collards or are we talking like mustards?
We say collards. I'm a collard fan. I'm a collard man. So.
Let's see. Okay. If I was going to do some collard greens,
With the neck bone. We put, let's say the, with the neck bone.
Neck bones? Okay, with the neck bones. Okay, if I were going to do greens with the neck bones, I would probably do, you got me. Greens are really, really hard to pair. So if I were going to do a white wine, I would probably do a Grüner Veltliner. I would do like a riper style Grüner Veltliner from the Wachau, something with a little bit more richness to it. And then Grüner Veltliner has like some of those vegetal notes and like some of those like spring onion characters that are going to kind of like act like a condiment. Cause like my, like some of my relatives, when they would have greens, they would like chop up green onion and stuff and like put it in there to kind of like accentuate it. Grüner Veltliner will kind of like do the same thing. It'll add like some of those like onion elements and a little bit of that richness. So if I were going to do a white, I would do a small rod Wachau Grüner Veltliner.
Okay. I like that one.
If it's the only podcast where you can learn greens, so what you be pairing with greens? The only podcast that you're learning.
Hey, Durb, you want to play a game? You want to play a game with people? A good, fun shot game? Yeah. Tell them to spell it. Say, if you spell Grüner Veltliner, I'll take this shot.
Everybody be drunk. Everybody be sleep.
I'm telling you. That mug has like 30 letters in it. It's so long. You can't fit it on a shirt, man. It's so long, bro. It's a long word.
And that's the great Grüner Veltliner. It's a white wine from Austria. Like if I had to compare it to something, I would say it's somewhat similar to Pinot Grigio. In terms of like how it sits on your palate, in terms of like the weight, the richness, it usually is not aged in very much oak, you know, if any. From the Wachau, you might see a little bit, but it's not going to be like oaky, like a Chardonnay, you know, like some Chardonnays or anything like that. Okay, let me think of another dish. Let's see. How about a honey baked ham with a pineapple glaze?
Honey baked. I wouldn't even go as far. I would do like a Chenin Blanc.
Chenin Blanc, okay.
Chenin Blanc, Loire Valley. I would do Chenin all day. Actually, not Loire. I would probably do South Africa. I would do Steen. A little bit more riper, a little bit more riper fruit, a little bit more rounder. And also, to me, Steen has kind of like that butterscotch, that honeyness to it. That's actually going to bring out to me the notes of that ham. Mm-hmm. As well, so I would go Chenin from South Africa,
which is also known as Steen.
Also known as Steen,
or Sten, or however you.
Sten, however they want to.
Is that pre-apartheid wine or post-apartheid wine?
Post.
It's both. Post. It's
well, post. They were making it before, but like they didn't really start making it on like a global scale until after apartheid.
Right, because you couldn't even get it out the country.
Right. I mean, and other countries weren't even, they weren't doing business in South Africa.
It's like, say, Africa is really, I would have to say, is probably still one of the greatest hidden gems. And wine period, they make really good sparkling Graham Beck, shout out to Graham Beck, and then they make killer Sauvignon Blancs, killer Chenin, and then they have their own things, Pinotage, which I'm beyond, I've never had a great Pinotage. They stand on that is their red wine. They stand on it, they will stand on it till the wheels fall off. Everyone I've had tastes like Band-Aid and hot burning rubber. But they will ride with that grape till the wheels fall off. You cannot tell a South African that Pinotage is bad. They listen. It's like saying, it's like telling the St. Louis and the Cardinals suck. They gonna ride till the wheels fall off.
No, because
the
Cardinals don't really suck.
No, we don't. We just got bad ownership.
Right.
We're gonna it's a whole discussion for another day.
That's a whole nother one. All right,
for you, how about macaroni and cheese.
Oh, macaroni and cheese. So honestly, like my go-to for macaroni and cheese is Chenin Blanc. And I discovered that on accident one year. I made a five cheese mac and cheese. The five cheeses.
Now, before y'all even go further, box macaroni and cheese or
no,
baked?
No, it better be baked. All right, box nothing over here.
It's been a lot
I'm
of
not
debate
trying to
going
get
on
now.
On the podcast network between shows about box or
That's like asking is macaroni and cheese an entree or a side?
All right.
If I ask you, if I ask you is macaroni a side or entree, and you tell me it's entree, that lets me know exactly a lot about you. And we're gonna get you right. You know, we're gonna be like Colin Kaepernick on his TV show. You're gonna be like this in the house. Man, all these flavors. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was Chin and Block. And I made 5 cheese mac and cheese. The 5 cheeses, I count Velveeta as a cheese. Colby Jack, sharp cheddar, Gouda, and mild cheddar.
Nice.
And I had some Chenin Blanc one day, and I tasted the two together, and it was unbelievable. But since you already said Chenin, I'm gonna do Riesling. I'm gonna say a Spätlese German Riesling.
Ooh, yes.
With a little bit of sweetness to it. Really, really gonna complement some of like those sharp, cheesy Colby, some of like that tanginess that you get from Colby and from sharp cheddar. So some of the sweet is going to like temper that, and like that high acidity from Riesling, like we were talking about with the champagne, is really, really going to cut through all of that fat and cheesiness. And it's literally going to make you eat a whole plate. And then your mac and cheese really will turn into an entree, because the wine just makes it taste so good that you're just going to keep eating and eating and eating.
Y'all got me already like ready for Thanksgiving already.
I can't wait for next week.
Oh, I can, because I gotta cook.
I gotta cook too. Sis, I'm right there with you. I am. Listen, my mom is literally, she like, listen, you in this industry now, son. I'm just gonna fall back and watch, and you know, I'll help That's you out. She's a passenger. What you call the passenger director? She's sitting in the passenger seat and just point.
Yeah.
You know,
Backseat driver.
That's exactly what it is.
The only thing my mom making is dressing. Everything else
is you.
All your boy.
All you.
I'm 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock in the morning. I will be on it.
Well, man, this is when we're gonna wrap up our first episode of Wine and Soul. Wanda, where can people get in touch with you? Talk more wine, talk and discuss all the different things you have going on.
You can reach me. I'm on Instagram at VinDiva7. I'm on Facebook under my name, Wanda Cole Nicholson, and Wanda Cole Nicholson Sommelier. And my website is www.vinbev.net.
All right, Cornelius.
You can find me on Instagram at c.anthonyjr, or you want to personally email me, you can email me at corneliusanthonyjr@gmail.com. I usually am very quick on my responses, so just reach out. I'm pretty sure I can say the same for Wanda. If you guys need any suggestions as far as your holiday selections, just choose a DM or reach out to us, or reach out to Daryl and he can give it to us, and we have no problem giving you guys some very helpful selections throughout the holidays for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
We need to do this fried chicken party and take it back. We need to take back the fried chicken and champagne party. I don't know how we do it. We need to take it back.
Be like, I paid it for
Charlie's Chicken in St. Louis. Do you remember Charlie's Chicken?
Is this the
I remember Charlie's Chicken.
They used to like any like big event, like big church event or a funeral, whatever, people always got chicken from Charlie's Chicken.
Or Lee's.
Is it still
Lee's?
Charlie's had like the best, like in terms like for cost or whatever, Charlie's had the best.
I don't think Charlie's is still open. I know my church used to use Charlie's. I don't know if they still open though. Oh, that's a good question. I know this much. Next time I come to St. Louis, I'm going to be at Triple A's as soon as the doors open. And I'm mad.
I get
my tripe sandwich. Listen, I feel some type of way about that. I really cried. I really sat in the hotel room and cried, because it's I even forgot the industry I'm in. Every restaurant is usually closed on Mondays. If you find one that's open on a Monday, that's phenomenal. So I was looking hard and I said, man, it's Monday closed. I was hurt. So I wanted that tripe sandwich.
I bet. So there's no St. Louis Charlie's Chicken. Joplin. Joplin, and there's a bunch in Oklahoma.
Joplin is the closest one. Wow.
Like the only other fried chicken place, they have Gus's here in Maplewood.
Yeah.
But to me, Gus's is just okay.
Yeah, this is okay. I mean, it's straight. It's out of Memphis.
Would you a Harold chicken? Would you use a Harold chicken?
Oh, you know I love Harold. They got a Harold's on you.
Come on now. Come on.
They got Harold's on Union?
It's a Harold's on Union here now. Yeah, it just opened up the pandemic. Yeah.
A St. Louis, like a Chicago Harold's?
Yes. Yep. It's on Union and St. Louis Avenue up in there.
I will be there.
So if you know, it's on the west side. It's beginning on the west side.
Let me say this. Let me say this about the fried chicken and champagne thing. To me, homemade fried chicken, I like your hood fried chicken spots, pairs the best for me with champagne. When you start talking about using it with churches or Popeyes, for some reason, it goes, but it's not the same impact. Listen, I got to go to Harold's and get some Harold's fried chicken and some champagne, a Blanc de Blanc. Boy, listen. I didn't want to ask Sis one question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Before we get off. How is the black, and I know you're in between, man, I don't know how you do it. You are definitely the MVP. I just want to tell you that off the gate. You are like superwoman to me.
I don't sleep very much.
No, seriously, you really are. Cause I know what you're doing and how you balance both. Listen, I got a hard time balancing one. So I commend you and I pray for you all the time, especially even my brother here, because I know what he does.
I appreciate that.
How is the black wine scene in St. Louis? Is there even a black wine scene in St. Louis?
There really isn't one. I mean, and if it is, I don't know about it. So I actually met a sister at one of our tastings at the store in Kirkwood, and she was asking me the same thing. She was from out of town and was like, hey, you know, like, where's the black wine scene? I was like, we don't really, you know, there's not like a big... there's not like a big number of black wine professionals that are even in St. Louis. There's myself, there's Alicia Calvert, and
no brothers.
None that I know of. None that are like, nobody working the floor, nobody in distribution, nobody in retail. Like I haven't seen anybody. Now granted, I don't get out a ton because I got kids and everything. But I have not seen it, not to the magnitude as like somewhere like Chicago or DC or New York. You know, it's just from a cultural standpoint, this is something that eluded us for so long. And, you know, we more so looked at it as like a hobby, whereas people in other cities were like, yo, I can get paid. I can make real money in this business.
Right.
We didn't really know that. Like, we were using like wine and spirits as kind of like a cultural level up instead of a financial level up.
Absolutely, I totally agree. I know when I come home, I always hit up. You know, I go to Pops and I'm hoping they open back up. I hope they fix the water damage issue they had. And I always go to the Four Seasons at the Luminarian. And me and their son, forgot my man's name.
Anthony?
And I remember the first, huh?
Anthony?
Yeah.
That's my boy.
And first time I met him, you know, I came and I gave him my card and he was like, you're a son of mine from Houston?
He's a good person to know. He's cool.
Oh, he's cool. Super, super cool. But like, and I wasn't offended, but they don't see a lot of us. They don't. So they're not shocked because you're not worthy or why are you doing what I'm doing? But like, there's really not a lot of us out there. You know, so like really. And another thing is that a lot of us call ourselves something that we're not. And that's a whole nother topic.
I got that on the list of topics for the next show, definitely. So I know you're passionate about that.
But I didn't know that though. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the experience I had in Chicago is definitely different than the experience I have here in St. Louis.
But like the St. Louis, the crazy thing about the crib is that we have a very got high Italian culture, high German culture. Actually went to a vineyard. I was out there maybe like early in the month. We went to a vineyard out in I can't remember the name of it. Nothing but you know, all Missouri wines have a very high German influence because that's where Germans came. So it was nothing but Rieslings,
Were you at Herman?
Yes.
Yeah, I just came from Herman this weekend.
A lot of sweet wines, bro. If you like sweet, man, they out there. They're bad. They're good. It's a very, very fun experience. It was cool. Definitely check out the vineyards. It's a fun experience. It's a family experience. It ain't just there's something for you and your lady. It's something you can do. That's another thing too, is that you can go to a vineyard and have fun with your family.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it can be a date thing. It also could be a family thing.
You can take Amtrak to Herman.
Yeah, you can.
You can get there in like an hour or so, maybe like an hour, 15 minutes. I drove, I worked an event. So that's why I was there. It's pretty drive. I wouldn't recommend doing it at night, but you could, you know.
The last question before I let you go is, 5 years from now, where would you like to see blacks in this industry?
You said blacks in this industry?
5 years from now.
Ownership. I had a talk with a good friend of mine out of DC, and he was talking about what all people were doing and who was who in social media. And he was like, yeah, but what did they own? And it really opened my eyes up to what, you know, the power that ownership has. And, you know, like, you can get all the Instagram likes that you want and all the followers that you want in the world, but until you actually own a piece of this action, you are still on the sidelines. And if you really want to make moves and you really, really want to move and shake, you are going to have to own. And that, you know, and that can be in a couple of different ways. It can be like owning restaurants. It could be owning retail stores. It could be, you know, owning a, you know, distributorship, or, you know, working with a supplier, importer, whatever. Just own something.
On that note, the Moose Champagne Sparkling Club coming February 2022.
Shameless plug.
We working on packaging right now. Yeah, and first shipment free to my brother and sister. But yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Or you could just get a distributor license and just bring in some champagne.
That's what
opened my eyes to. You know, like that's where, like, you're dealing directly. You're dealing directly with folks.
Exactly. You cut out the middleman. You go straight to the source.
Yep. You are the middleman. You're the man and the middleman.
That's the thing about Texas.
You the man.
I'm talking about that offline. That's Texas. Ooh, Lord, Abbott.
So ownership.
Ownership.
That's the goal, y'all.
All right. We will see y'all soon on the next episode of Wine and Soul.